want to step on the bell. We are living at a time of greater stress and anxiety than most of us have experienced in our lifetimes. Political polarization continues to drive us apart. The rising cost of food, housing, healthcare put those basic necessities out of reach of many Americans. And those are at the root of now the longest government shutdown in history. And our politicians would rather blame the other party than to work together to find a solution. Meanwhile, immigrants are still being deported and families separated. We heard over the weekend about an American citizen arrested and the car being driven off with his toddler inside. Political violence continues to escalate. The values that our country was founded on are being subverted under the guise of serving those very values, leaving some of us to wonder if democracy will survive, and if it does, how many people will lose their lives, their livelihoods, their homes in the process. As we approach Thanksgiving, we may wonder, what do we have to be grateful for? Well, despite the problems that our society faces, most of us live pretty well. About 10 years ago, this quote made the rounds on social media. It said, "If you have food in your fridge, clothes on your back, a roof over your head, and a place to sleep, you are richer than 75% of the world. If you have money in the bank, your wallet, and some spare change, you are among 8% of the world's wealthy. If you woke up this morning with more health than illness, you are more blessed than the million people who will not survive this week. If you have never experienced the danger of battle, the agony of imprisonment or torture, or the horrible pangs of starvation, you are luckier than 500 million people who are alive and suffering. If you can read this message, you are more fortunate than 3 billion people in the world who cannot read at all." Now, I'm not sure how much of this is true or how much has changed in 10 years. I did spot check a couple of statistics. The literacy rate is far lower than 3 billion people, but sadly, the death rate is about the same or a little higher. I attempted to track down the source, and it was attributed variously to Christian media and to Louis C.K. So I'm not sure where it started out. But it stuck with me because it makes the point that our standard of living in this country is higher than most people around the world, and it far surpasses any other time in history. That's why it's so difficult to see progress in these areas being undone by cuts to USAID, well, actually cutting the whole USAID agency, and cuts to domestic aid projects. But focusing on what is still good can help us cope with anxiety. In other words, it's helpful to compare ourselves to the many who have less than we do, than to the few who have more. That's challenging in our consumer culture, and where a relentless advertising industry floods us with messages to convince us to buy more stuff. I read once that the goal of advertising is to create greed and dissatisfaction. Given the high standard of living we enjoy, we will only continue to consume and to buy more if we think that there's something better out there than what we already have. Advertisers don't want us to realize that our old iPhone still works fine. No, we need to upgrade to the one that runs faster, takes sharper pictures, has more memory. And we couldn't possibly be caught wearing last year's jeans. In fact, today's fast fashion isn't even made to last. Advertising directs our attention to what we don't have instead of to what we do have. It focuses us on scarcity when many of us live with abundance. Feeling grateful, of course, is also challenging when each day's news details these egregious attacks on our democracy by an administration that goes unchecked by Congress or the Supreme Court. We're witnessing the dismantling of gains made by recent movements for racial and gender justice, the rollback of efforts to address economic disparity, climate change, programs that provide disaster relief are stalled. I dread hearing the news some days, and I often just turn it off when I reach the limit of what I can take in. But rather than feel despair about how much is going wrong, We can be grateful that we live at a time when what we do matters so much. We can be grateful when we the people must stand up for ourselves and for those who are too vulnerable in this political climate to stand up for themselves. At no time in our lives has it mattered so much what choices we made at the polls this past week. It matters what we drive, eat, wear, and consume. It matters whether we show up for protests, support shelters, soup kitchens, and food banks, whether we get trained to resist ICE raids, as many people in our community did a couple weeks ago, and whether we write to our elected officials to hold them accountable. A year ago this week, if you think about that election cycle, we knew that however that election went, half of the country was going to be plunged into fear. I woke up the day after the election realizing that I was now part of the resistance, but I was grateful that the part of the country in that role was not the part that is heavily armed and that had already demonstrated on January 6th that their willingness to use violence when elections do not go their way. I was also grateful that the losing side would look out for those most affected by the policies of this administration, immigrants, trans people, others who live on the margins. As I live into that role as part of the resistance, I continue to be grateful for this community, for the UUCM Church, that provides social connection and support and that takes an active part in addressing needs in our community. Now, I'm going to assume there may be some of you who did not vote the way that I did, but you are here because you still care about these issues. In our busy bicentennial weekend with three events in less than 48 hours, I don't know if you all did the math, but that was a lot, right? I'd say half of this congregation also showed up to the local No Kings demonstration, along with about 500 other people in Meadville and millions of people across the country. That turnout illustrates again that we live at a time when what we do matters more than ever. We are still part of a movement for positive social change that continues at the ground level around the world, even if it may seem stalled when we look at the top. At times such as this, gratitude is also good medicine. The practice of gratitude helps us cope with all that bad stuff. Even the CDC website recommends gratitude. It says, "Gratitude may be the best kept secret to reduce stress and feel better. Practicing gratitude every day can improve your physical and emotional well-being." I found this to be true in 2020 when we faced an equally stressful time, a global pandemic, protests about unarmed Black people who died at the hands of police, another polarizing election season. In the midst of all that, I began to keep a gratitude journal. I ended each day by writing down what had gone right that day, instead of venting about everything that had gone wrong. That helped me keep life in perspective. I was able to find gratitude on even the worst days, even if it was just that I was going to sleep in a warm, safe house with the opportunity for the next day to be better. Diana Butler Bass, who wrote the words I quoted for our opening words, also wrote during the pandemic that, quote, "Gratitude is more than a feeling. It is a disposition, a choice, a way of looking at the world. It is a spiritual practice. Even now, when there's so much fear and anger, our lives are surrounded by gifts and kindnesses." In recent months, she wrote, "I've certainly learned how much I had taken for granted, and yet how many blessings still attend us. Reminding myself to practice gratitude has made a difference navigating these days," end quote. Gratitude helped many of us get through the stress of 2020, and it can help us navigate 2025 and 26 and however long this goes on. Gratitude, as you may know, is of course part of most religions, especially indigenous cultures. The Haudenosaunee people who lived in our region had a practice that they called the words that come before all else. This was also known as the Thanksgiving Address. This was a ritual of appreciation that they used to start the day, to start a meeting, or to start negotiations with people of other nations. It helps the participants appreciate their interdependence on the web of life. That ritual begins, "Today we have gathered, and when we look upon the faces around us, we see that the cycle of life continues. We have been given the duty to live in balance and harmony with each other and all living things. So now we bring our minds together as one as we give our greetings and our thanks to each other as people." The ritual goes on to thank Mother Earth, the water and the fish, plant life that provides food and medicines, animals, trees, birds, the winds, the rain, sun, moon, and stars. It thanks teachers who have instructed them how to live together over the ages. And finally, it thanks the Great Spirit with these words: "Everything we need to live a good life is here on Mother Earth. Let us pile up our thanks like a heap of flowers on a blanket. We will each take a corner and toss it into the sky so that our thanks will be as rich as the gifts of the world that shower down upon us. For all the love that is around us, we gather our minds together as one and send our choicest words of greetings and thanks to the Creator." Expressing gratitude reinforces our ties to each other. The Haudenosaunee blessing illustrates that interdependent web of life, which should sound familiar to Unitarians. It's our seventh principle. That web provides all that we need while allowing us to help others. Again, that sense of interdependence runs counter to a culture of individualism that encourages us to look out for ourselves, and to a market economy that relies on debt, obligation, and payback. Gratitude can move us toward a gift economy that operates with no expectation of repayment and that supports our ties to each other instead of stressing those ties. Gratitude can be as simple as writing a thank you note for a gift or for someone, or to someone just for who they are and what they mean to you. That simple act demonstrates respect and honor as well as gratitude. My mom was the queen of thank you notes. She acknowledged even the smallest of gifts with a handwritten thank you note. And when she died, I found a treasure trove of notes that people had sent her, thanking her for a loaf of bread she had baked and taken to them, for a visit when they were sick, or for remembering their birthday with a card or a small gift. She also had every thank you note I think I wrote to her from the time I left home in 1981. Not as many as she had written me, but I have a collection of all the ones she had sent me over the years. Each time she visited me, she thanked me for my hospitality, and each time I visited her, she thanked me for whatever I had done with her for her while I was there. Like, you need to thank your kids, right? But she did. When she died, there was no sense of gratitude left unexpressed between us. I had a decades-long trail of notes tracing our gratitude and our love for each other. Now, not everyone is lucky enough to have that kind of family. For some people, families are a source of stress and not support. But it's never too late to let gratitude help to heal a rift. In an episode of the medical drama, The Pitt, there are two siblings whose father is dying, and they are struggling to let go. Dr. Robbie, who's played by Noah Wiley, tells them about a simple Hawaiian ritual that he has seen many families benefit from at such a time. In this ritual, you say four simple things to a loved one: "I love you," "Thank you," "I forgive you," "Please forgive me." We often find it hard to thank the people with whom we have complicated relationship, and that usually means family members, right? And some relationships may need to be severed for someone's own well-being. But where connection is still intact, gratitude can be healing. It focuses on whatever ties you still feel to each other. You only have to remember how good it feels when someone thanks you to recognize that expressing gratitude can help mend a relationship and strengthen our sense of interconnection with all of those around us. We have many opportunities to practice gratitude this month, right? Our annual Thanksgiving service and meal with the Faith Builder School on the 23rd, I think, Kareen, is that right? November 23rd. Thanksgiving Day itself, which can be more than more about food and football and whatever else we do that day. There's also a service on gratitude at the end of the month. It'll be on the 30th over in the parish hall, and Kareen and Rich will lead us in actually practicing. You can think about this as the lecture where I talk to you about gratitude. On that Sunday, you'll actually get to practice it by naming the things for which you are grateful. And then we're also in the middle of our annual pledge drive. It's very short. We kicked it off last weekend on the heels of a glorious celebration of our 200-year legacy. Making a financial pledge is a way that we can show our gratitude for what this church has been in the past, what we currently do in these buildings and in the community, and to guarantee that our ministries will continue into the future. Making a pledge recognizes that most of us have an abundance and can give out of gratitude for what this church means to us. But even small gifts can make a difference, and those without financial resources can give in other ways. But I'll be talking more about giving in my sermon next month. I heard a story on NPR last week about how the ongoing shutdown is affecting air travel and the potential for it disrupting millions of people's travel on Thanksgiving week. One woman they interviewed said she tried to thank everyone she encountered in the airport. Isn't that lovely? At a time when people are understandably frustrated, and many would take it out on TSA workers who are required to work but are not currently getting paychecks, or frontline airline workers who are dealing with mandatory flight reductions over which they have no control. Many people would take out their frustration on those people, right? But this woman instead chose to not make their jobs harder, but to express gratitude for them being there and doing whatever they could to make things easier for her. Imagine how that made those frazzled airport workers feel. As we go through this season of Thanksgiving, may gratitude help you focus on what's going right and the opportunities we have to address what's going wrong. May it bring you happiness, meaning, and a deeper sense of appreciation for that web of life on which we all depend. May it be so. Amen.